Our theme tonight is G7 pushes for higher PEs. For those of you who don't know what a PE is, it's a price-earnings ratio and expresses the relationship between a stock's earnings per share or a company's earnings and its market valuation. So the idea is the higher you can get the PE, the more the value of the stock can go up, and that's a critical issue in the game of economic warfare, because the countries whose stocks have the highest PEs gets the lower cost of capital and gets to buy everybody else cheap. I touched on all of this in last week's Money and Market, but I've decided to talk about it again in more depth. In fact, last weekend, after watching the politics roll out for a week, I realized that it was hard for many people to see the game. And so I decided to write a blog post, which has been making its way around the internet, called Make Way for the Killers and the Great Tax Haven Roundup. So let's talk about what this all means and why I'm referring to it as G7 pushes for higher PEs. It's funny, we're going to be talking about with Dr. Tivette tonight about physical water flows. And I think we all understand in an irrigation system, when you engineer the water to go certain places and not to others, then, you know, things grow where the water goes and they don't grow where the water doesn't go. And it's the same, we're watching the same exact process of engineering financial irrigation because it decides who and what grows economically and what does not. And that's literally what we're seeing, but because financial water is more invisible to many of us than physical water, you know, we need to find a way to see it despite it's being invisible. So the first thing I describe in my blog post is that there are no scandals. All of the stuff you're seeing about AP reporters and IRS is either trumped up or nothing new. What you're really seeing is an effort being made to get the old team at the IRS and the Department of Justice out and put in a team which is going to be able to lead what I refer to in the blog post as an escalation of the global financial war. What did we see? The weekend of May 11th, G7 had an emergency meeting in London, minus Russia. It was G7, not G8. So Putin wasn't invited, and he's been kicking U.S. diplomats ever since, clearly very irritated. We've been watching the G7 central banks buy mortgage bonds and equities for months and months and months, floating and keeping the bond and stock markets up. But now the hunt for capital is on because the explosion of balance sheets is getting a little uncomfortable. We knew that the tax havens were in the crosshairs already. Certainly we've watched Switzerland be targeted for 4 years and really brought under the jurisdiction of the United States, having to supply information for tax compliance. And literally, if anybody in Switzerland now wants to manage money for an American as a practical matter, they really have to be SEC registered. So we watched the most powerful sort of money haven globally brought into compliance over the last 4 years. And now that that's done, it's easy for the Americans to move in on all the other tax havens. But we knew it was up before the G7 meeting because you saw a tremendous amount of leaks about the kinds of money that are in the offshore havens. But so at the G7 meeting, they announced this concerted plan by all members to target the tax havens. And you could see the seriousness of the move upon us because literally on Monday, the headlines were ready to go. Scandal at the IRS. Then last week, Wednesday, the head of the IRS, who was in acting, and some of the top leadership is out. More people out today or this week, and then a new acting from OMB over at the IRS on Thursday. We don't know who the new commissioner is going to be, but my prediction, as I said implied in the blog post, is it's going to be a killer. There is an estimated $20 to $30 trillion in the offshore havens. And to bring those into compliance, as the way the Swiss has been done, requires probably a new kind of leadership at Department of Justice. As I said in the blog post, Eric Holder, our current Attorney General, has certainly proven himself willing to play ball. At the same time, going after jurisdictional issues on 32 trains is quite an amazing squabble. And my guess is they prefer somebody with international experience who is a lot more loyal to certain congressional quarters, because whoever does this job is going to have a major say in saying where the financial water goes and who and what grows. So this is something where many people along the chain of command are going to want to say and want to make sure there's somebody in there who they're comfortable with. As I said, if the U.S. stock market continues to perform the way it's performing and has PEs significantly above other stock markets around the world, which has pretty much been the case for the last 2 years, then it means a tremendous acquisition binge and sort of buying of markets and assets globally by the stocks that enjoy the higher PEs. That's exactly what we saw at the end of the last housing bubble in 1991. So you combine those high PEs with the capital access to the financial coup d'etat, and somebody could have quite a party. So I expected the drumbeats to continue, and sure enough, we saw on Monday the Christian Science Monitor asking if Holder was going to be out, and we saw lots of different trial balloons about things related to other things in addition to this that could increase the amount of money flowing into the equity markets. Time magazine ran a trial balloon saying that the federal government will require mandatory retirement accounts. If that's true, that could be billions more for the securities market, and it would hit the middle class in America at the same time that they're being hit by Obamacare. So that's quite a squeeze on a certain segment of small businesses in addition with healthcare. Then the House passed, we talked about it last week, not this week, but last week passed a bill requiring that the SEC promulgate the regulations for the Jobs Act, which I continue to think could play a very important part, particularly in branding and encouraging support of the equity markets. And then Google, and this is up on the blog, announced that you could basically send money in your Google wallet by simply clicking on the dollar sign in your Gmail account. That kind of functionality combined with crowdfunding could mean that the estimates of crowdfunding flows into equities in the first year after the SEC promulgates the regulations. That estimate that I gave on the Salier Report several weeks ago of $3 billion, I think, is conservative. Well, what does it mean if there's a serious attack on the tax havens around the world? The moves of capital could be unprecedented, and there are several pots of money. One is, of course, individuals. The other is corporations, and we've watched this week, as part of this process, very dramatic testimony by Apple and articles about many other large American multinationals and the amount of taxes they do or do not pay as a result of all sorts of different mechanisms of shifting activities or reporting of income abroad. And so this is both capital flows as well as tax issues, and it hits both the corporate world and the individual citizen and investor as well. What's important to understand is if we do get these kinds of Switzerland-like processes moving through the tax havens, what we're going to see is the equivalent of a G7 capital controls applied across the board. So if you think of what happened in Cyprus, that's literally the targeting of a tax haven. And we see, for example, Cyprus being forced to sell its precious metals and what that did to the precious metals. So we're watching D7 extend and tighten up their jurisdiction, and real competition now beginning on a variety of pots of private capital. I know on the Salieri Report, many subscribers have been concerned that there would be this kind of targeting of the IRAs and 401k as well. The reality is there's a lot more money in the tax haven, so it looks like they're in the doghouse first. Now, interestingly enough, I posted the blog post on Monday, early Monday, and proceeded to watch real pressure pushing for Eric Holder to get fired. We had senators coming out saying they wanted him fired, pressure on the corporate tax story. And then the first thing that happened is, as I had several very important allies say, They had no idea what I was talking about. What did this kind of attack have to do with capital going into one market or the other? And what I realized is there's very little understanding of the extent to which these behind-the-scenes actions can force both financial institutions and countries to channel capital in a variety of different ways. For example, if the regulators come in and, as we've seen after Dodd-Frank, do audits of firms and say, you know, if you have more than 20% precious metals in your accounts, that's a violation of the suitability rule. And literally, I've just in the last 6 weeks, I've had a brokerage firm say if an account has more than 20% precious metals, it has to leave. So that's the kind of example of what regulators can do from behind the scenes. The most powerful we know is where G7 says to a financial institution or country, we're going to cut you off the SWIFT system. So we're going to cut you off the clearance systems globally that make it possible for you to function. We know what they did to WikiLeaks when they cut off their payment systems. Well, the same kinds of things are going on behind the scenes, and that's why you see literally countries, you know, whether it's because they can't, their credit's been cut off, they can't get the bailout, or they're cut off of clearance systems, suddenly, you know, they're forced to sell their gold. Now, as the drumbeats were hot and heavy for Holder, what happened? A little relief came because we got killer tornadoes in Oklahoma City, and that grabbed the headlines and certainly the attention of the senators in Oklahoma who voted against relief for Connecticut on Newtown Sandy and were busy trying to explain why their situation was different. As I said, the attacks on Holder softened because the tornadoes took precedent. And interestingly enough, then on Wednesday, what do we see? An announcement from the CBO. I'll just read it to you. The Congressional Budget Office noted Wednesday that a carbon tax could generate significant revenues for the United States and avert catastrophic effects of climate change. CBO said in a new report that there are many uncertainties, blah, 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 and on, you can read that post on the blog. My question is, did this breakaway civilization push back? If you look at G7 and the breakaway civilization are two very different factions competing on planet Earth. And if you look at how much money I suspect they have in the offshore havens and how much I suspect they have in precious metals, it wouldn't surprise me if they weren't very pleased with the G7 push into demanding transparency in and sort of jurisdiction over the tax havens. And I suspect what we're watching behind the scenes is some serious competition. And I talked a lot about this at the beginning of the year and in the article Coming Clean Beyond the Fiscal Cliff, which if you haven't read and you're interested, I would really encourage you to do because it describes all the different reasons why we have very serious issues in re-engineering and trying to balance the federal budget. How do you cut the taxes on people who have private armies and kill with impunities? How do you raise taxes on them? How do you cut all the subsidies going to them? Because we've now created these different groups who are getting major amounts of money out of the financing, out of the federal credit programs, and out of the budget. And we've been pouring money into them, you know, and they can be very very opinionated. They're not used to getting cut, and they're not used to having to live within a budget. So we're now cutting into people who have tremendous political power. And that's why whatever we're watching with both G7 and the pushback is a very, very interesting debate. Is the covert side of the House going to cut back, or is the overt side of the House continue to be squeezed even more and more? Well, the drumbeat continued on Holder. Now Holder's in the doghouse because of drones. How many Americans have been killed with drones? What are the policies going to be on drones? All of this is going to get a break now with a holiday weekend. Now, let's turn to the stock market. We saw the stock market trade off because of the Asian stock markets trading off yesterday. There's tremendous nervousness, and let's talk about why. The U.S. stock markets have come up quite a bit this year, and as a result, we're trading way above the moving averages. So when you're this far above the moving averages in terms of price, it's very difficult to want to buy, because so much of portfolio performance depends on getting good entry prices. The most significant sort of bubble in the markets right now is Japan, which is, even despite the fall off yesterday, is up over 40% this year. We're watching the Japanese central banks print extraordinary amounts of money and driving the yen way down and the Japanese stock market up. So, but reason number one is there's been quite a run up. Number two, big question is where the earnings going to come from. Part of the nervousness in Asia is China continues to slow down. China's not necessarily going to be the miracle that pulls everybody out, particularly because a lot of the Chinese manufacturing and activity was making products for both Europe and the United States, and it's particularly with austerity in Europe, you're seeing that, you know, that demand simply going away. But we've watched many different tricks on getting earnings to go up, and I think many investors wonder where the earnings going to come from. That's one of the reasons that makes this debate over corporate taxes so interesting, because one of the things that supported corporate earnings is simply to just increasingly allow these mechanisms so that corporations can avoid paying taxes. If you look at the Salier report we did on taxes in December, I put up a chart, and one of the things it showed is how much corporate taxes have come down as a percentage of contribution over the last two decades. It's quite extraordinary, particularly given the sort of externalities that they add. So it's fair to say that corporations are unlikely not paying their fair share. Finally, another reason for nervousness, blog post that I put up on May 13, a wonderful post by my partner Chuck Gibson. If you look at the history of the markets from 1960 to date, if every year you simply sold your stock position on May 1st, and then bought it back in November, what you would discover is that approximately 100% of the gains in the market, in the U.S. market since 1960, have come between November 1st and May 1st. There's an old saying in the equity market, sell in May and go away, and they're absolutely true. Believe it or not, if you had, and the charts are up in this blog post, it's back on May 13th. If you had put $10,000 in the U.S. equity markets in 1960, and then if you bought in November 1st and sold in May, you'd have over $800,000. And instead, if you had bought on May 1st and sold November 1st, after all these years, you would still have approximately $10,000. You would have essentially made nothing. So it's quite extraordinary. And so summer is not a good time for prices in risk-based assets, including equity. And that's one of the questions, you know, that makes this whole debate about G7 rounding up and pushing a lot more capital towards the equity markets, can they overcome the likelihood of a significant correction this summer? You know, so can they put enough in so that even with summer we won't get a change? Now, this leaves us with another conundrum on precious metals, because as summer is also, you know, precious metals also being a risk-based asset, generally summer is not a good season for precious metals prices. And so another question is the institutional push to continue to keep prices down on precious metals, as we saw them do with the targeting of Cyprus and the selling of the Cyprus precious metals, is that going to continue? As I said in the last precious metals market report, I think 80% chance that the primary trend reasserts itself. But even in that case, we have a long, hot summer to live through. We haven't found the bottom. And if we don't hold the support lines at 1310, we could clearly break through down to 1100, as we talked about in the precious metals market report, and still be in the primary trend up. And I think for many investors, the question is, if you look at the sort of bubble in equities and the slam down in precious metals, which is going to grow faster in the future? Is it going to be equities or is it going to be precious metals? And that's why this shift of capital, if it succeeds, is so important, because we see G7 trying to target significant capital in the direction of the equity markets and bond markets as well. If they succeed, it could mean a lot more water going into equities and, if anything, a lot more precious metals being put on the market and targeted down. The other thing it could mean, and this is something we all need to remember, is it could mean volatility in any asset class. We saw in Cyprus the impact on the uninsured deposits. That kind of situation could run through the markets. So we're looking at a situation that is highly political. The capital movements are potentially very, very big. And what it could mean is any asset class could be in the doghouse. The one thing I do think it means on precious metals that's very important to know is that physical precious metals is becoming more and more attractive vis-a-vis paper. The pressures on the physical market and the sort of squabbling over physical inventories and collateral are very real, reports coming in from all over the world. So if you want to rebalance some of your precious metals, it's probably much better for you to rebalance out of your securities, keep your coins. Another last thing affecting both the equity markets and the bond market is the rosy headlines on the budget. We saw sort of great news trumpeted, as I talked about last week, that the federal budget had a surplus in April. Don't count on that meaning too much. May will still be back in the red. We still have a debt ceiling problem to face coming in the fall. And on the new budget, we're going to continue to see many, many cuts and real problems with the deficit. So despite the fact that the dollar has been soaring and the news makes things sound rosy, expect that to cause more real problems, including in the market, in the fall. But more on that as we move through the summer.